This is Barbara Glickstein with Health Cetera. Robin Kogan is Health Cetera's senior nurse, school nurse correspondent. She's on the board of Affirm, the nation's leading nonpartisan network of healthcare professionals working to reduce firearm injury, in addition to leadership roles in school nurse associations in New Jersey and nationally on the School Nurses Association. She publishes a daily blog, The Relentless School Nurse, and returns today to talk about returning to school for our children. Some of whom already have started school, but let's talk about school days starting, because if they did, it probably was just last week. And welcome back, Robin Kogan.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. Yes, another school year is starting. 2023-2024 is right at our door. And like you said, there are states, mostly in the South and even out West, that started school last week. So this is all freshly coming back to school. And what can we do to keep our students and all of us safe and healthy and truthfully ready to learn? Because that's the point.
That is the point. And so there are things that I'd love you to talk to the grownups who are listening, all grownups who have any relationship working with children, caring for children, raising children up. We're seeing more and more multi-generational homes. So everybody's job, including aunts and uncles and nephews and nieces, can help launch this school year in the most safe and productive way, and also fun, making learning fun. So let's hear what you have to say as the school nurse with a number of years of experience on how this transition can best work for all.
So thank you for that question. I think one of the most important things for families to understand is that every year is a new year. So whatever was in place the prior year has to be revised and the dates changed and updated for the next coming school year. And sometimes that's where we get into some misunderstandings and miscommunications. So for example, if your child had medication in the 22-23 school year, that does not automatically port over to 23-24. We need information about the medication. We need new orders in order to be able to provide care during school. So that is pretty strict throughout the country. I do need to say, though, the first thing I would make sure, especially if you've moved to a new area, is to find out, does your child's school have a school nurse all day, every day? Or is this person shared among multiple buildings? Because that makes a huge difference. If that school nurse is shared between multiple buildings, then most likely they are overseeing unlicensed assistive personnel in your child's school. Not every school, in fact, the majority of schools do not have a full-time school nurse in their buildings all day, every day. So that's the first thing I would want to find out.
And how might that impact, say, medication being delivered for children who require it multiple times a day? How might that be impacted by that not having a school nurse and it being someone who's unlicensed but in that role?
It gets very tricky. There are some states based on the Nurse Practice Act that allows nurses to delegate. There are some states that do not allow school nurses to delegate. And there are some districts that never had a school nurse. 25% of schools across the country have no school nurse at all. That's why you'll see in some cases parents coming into school to give meds, or even the school secretary giving meds. I mean, this becomes very unsafe when assessments are required in order to give the meds. If your child has asthma, if your child is having, let's say they have diabetes and they're having low blood sugar or high blood sugar, there are assessments needed. If your child has seizure disorder. So this is why it is so important that your child has access to a school nurse all day, every day. We cannot enforce that enough. We cannot highlight that enough.
And I remember when my children were young and needing to prepare for a return to school. You know, life is full. Many parents are working full time. Their schedules are not always aligned with getting appointments with their pediatric practitioner. So sometimes there's that scramble to get all those forms filled out. And what happens if a child starts school, but those forms are not filled out? Are they allowed to stay in school?
It's not ideal because how about if there is an emergency? So there are some districts that are much stricter than others about not being able to begin school, especially if it's a student who is new to the school. You have to provide an updated health record, a recent physical, and updated immunizations. Now, the school nurse can help you either make those appointments if you don't have insurance, help you get access through care coordination to a federally qualified healthcare center, let's say, to help make those steps easier. But these things are needed for your child to be safely to be in school. So for example, every year you should reach out to the school nurse to talk about your child, to talk about the concerns before your child becomes ill. Or if something changed between June and September, school nurses are also the person to turn to for the very important paperwork that is needed in order to allow us to administer even over-the-counter medications in case your child becomes ill at school. And then for parents whose children have chronic illnesses, please visit us face-to-face or through Zoom every year to make sure that we know what's changed, if there are any new additional issues that your child faces. I mean, remember, when we have children as young as 3 and 4 year olds, sometimes, you know, we find out that a child has a seizure disorder because they have their first seizure at school or their first episode with high or low blood sugar at school. Many times the health issues arise for the first time in school, including things, really scary things like allergy, you know, food allergy. A child may have never had an experience with, let's say, peanut butter before, and then we find out at school that they have a nut allergy and it's not known. These are the things that we have to know ahead of time in order to create the safest environment. And it's also important, especially for parents of children with chronic illnesses, that anyone who touches that child, anyone who interfaces with that child has to be aware of what's happening, whether it's the bus driver, the gym teacher, all the special area teachers, the paraprofessionals, the SRO, the security officer, anyone who may interface with your child really does need to have an update about their health. So it's important to meet as a team.
And you mentioned once before in our conversations about returning to school, about things that may have happened, transitions in a family over that end of school day last year into starting this year. And those transitions could be a death in the family, divorce, moving, sickness in the family. Let's talk a little bit about that, Robin, because I when you talked to me about it the last time, it really struck me how important that is for the child's health and wellness and development and ready to learn.
So we walk a fine balance of not trying to be too intrusive in terms of families' private circumstances. But when those private circumstances impact a child's, let's say, school readiness, the ability to learn, because maybe they are very anxious about things that are happening in the home, it's really important to bring those trusted school staff into the conversation. So for example, just this summer, I've had families where their house burned down, a house they were renting burned down. The house that family members lived in across the street was involved in the fire. So this fire impacted their family in multiple houses on the same block. We would want to know, as school nurses, as teachers, as educators, as people caring for your children a good majority of the day, what happened over the summer so that we can help support them, so that we understand maybe some of the concerning or new behaviors that weren't there in June but are there in September have arisen. When a family member dies, any of those major life events that could impact your child, if your child has a new diagnosis, if a family member has a new diagnosis, kids process things so differently. Number one, they often blame themselves, and they bring that stress and that concern to school, which makes them really unprepared to deal with the social and emotional issues that come up when they're outside of the family dynamic. So whatever you can share that you're comfortable sharing because you know you believe it can impact your child's ability to learn is important to share with us.
I was just thinking about other times that may all seem very normal, especially, you know, it seems like a healthy situation where there might be a new child in the family,
a new baby, big one.
New baby, right? So everyone assumes that, oh, you know, so-and-so really loves being a big brother and a big sister. And then they come to school and maybe everybody didn't know that that happened, that that transition happened. And maybe they are not always so happy about it, as is also normal and a healthy response. So those are also the kinds of life changes you would recommend knowing about.
Right. Any major life event, anything that changes the dynamic of the family, the living constellation of the family, like the ecosystem of the family, is really important to share with the school nurse. Certainly any all updated health information, health concerns. We really can be that care coordination, point of care coordination to help get you into, even if it's into seeing a specialist, into counseling services. I mean, we have so many resources at our fingertips. And a big part of school nursing is care coordination.
So explain what that means and what kinds of course, in some schools, those source resources are limited or not even available. But in schools that have care coordination available, just give us a brief explanation of what that means so people who have no idea would know how to access it.
So it's interesting. I mean, I work in a very, they call it an under-resourced city. But what's interesting about where I work in Camden is that there are many resources. They're under-tapped. They're underutilized. So the role of a school nurse in a city like mine is to know the resources within my community and then plug my families into them, not just by handing them a phone number, but by sitting down and saying, let's call together. Let's make this call together. I'll give you one example. Some people may feel that this was not a school nurse role, but I absolutely did. I had a parent that came from a part of Guatemala where they spoke a Mayan Indian dialect. So for her, Spanish was a second language. So English was not even in the picture. So I had very little ability to interpret with her, but she knew I was the school nurse. She knew I cared for her child. And she ended up having a complicated pregnancy. She had an ectopic pregnancy. She worked in a factory. She gave the factory manager a return to work note where he promptly fired her because he felt that the note was fraudulent. She brings the note to school. Now, this is care coordination, you know, kind of on a maybe larger scale, because is this about her child? I believe it is about her child, because if a mother can't go back to work, that definitely impacts her child. So anyway, she brings me the note. I'm thinking I'll take care of this very easily. I call the employer and he proceeds to tell me all the reasons why the note was fraudulent. One was that it was handwritten. One is that it didn't have a date. And one is that the phone number was wrong. So I happened to know this practice and I called the phone number. It was actually written on a prescription pad and there was a sticky note, like an Avery label on top where all of the doctor's information was. So I called the number. Interestingly enough, the number was wrong. There was no date and it was handwritten. So I understand why he was being suspicious, but I knew this mom really had this event and I wanted to help her get her job back. So I called the practice and it turns out that there was somebody covering for the NP who she was out on a medical and they created labels to cover up her stack of prescription pads and the labels had the phone number wrong. So they printed up 400 labels that had an incorrect phone number. It made me wonder how many times did this happen to other people who were trying to return to work. So to make a long story short, my care coordination in that effort was to link the employer directly to the provider and they worked it out and mom got her job back.
You know, it's even a bigger message in addition to that important role that you played to help make that get her employment back is we never We probably need to all have our investigative hats on more often than we put them on, Robin. And isn't that the work of nursing? That on the face of things, it may look like one thing, but in fact, it's other important points that need to be uncovered. And that's true about our relationship with children who are not our own, who are not living in that, who are not live, we're not living with at home, but then they come into the school system and we need to understand maybe why are they showing up late every day? And then to discover that the only way they can get to school is after a parent gets home from night work, is able to feed the other children, and on and on and on. So the point being that with some information, again, we're not digging into personal matters that don't want to leave the home, but sometimes with just enough of an explanation, we can help maybe find out that there's a school bus pickup that's closer than getting your child all the way into the school building. And let's help you figure that out and make life easier for everyone in the morning. Certainly mornings in most homes are chaotic. What about how to help with some of the younger children? And it's not exclusive to the younger children, about not having the same teacher as last year, fears about coming back to school. What kinds of things can grown-ups say to children that are not blaming them for being fearful, but perhaps supporting them to move into that transition space?
This transition time is super, super important. So even starting now with a few more days, another week before school starts, beginning to have those conversations, finding out maybe who else is in your child's class, writing a letter to the teacher with your child, like a letter for opening day that you can share. I'm excited to start my second grade, my third grade, my fourth grade. Making those individual connections from both ends are incredibly important. It helps develop rapport and communication. And the more we can personalize it, making it student family centered is much better for the success. They say that in elementary school, they teach the child, and in high school, middle high school, they teach the subject. I don't buy that. I think we should always be centering the child and centering the family. So what is the best way to create these open communications? It's having an understanding on both sides of expectations, because there's expectations certainly that parents have for teachers, but there's expectations that educators have for parents. There's certainly expectations that school nurses have as well, because our job is to keep everybody safe. And that includes school staff, students, and even visitors in a building. So most, when you boil things down, most, kind of negative interactions typically come from miscommunication and misunderstanding. So let's get on the same page that we are on the same team. We are here to have your child succeed. That may look differently for your child than it looks for another child. But having your child succeed, which means that they are safe, healthy, ready to learn, and present, is the goal. That we are still overcoming incredible challenges from COVID. I didn't even want to mention it, but it's still in the background, friends. We're seeing an uptick in this new variant. There are some schools, I just read about a school in San Antonio, I think, that shut down for a week already, because more than 10% of their teachers were sick with COVID. So COVID is not gone. We have to learn to live with it in a new way. So there are still these, underlying issues that have been really turning school on its head, honestly, over the last 4 years, that continue.
We will have a series with you back around what can communities do to make those school environments safer. We just have a couple of moments left, and I'm aware of the air quality issue. You mentioned COVID, which of course we know air quality was an issue prior to COVID. Certainly it was a pandemic related issue. But we also have now seeing smoke, wildfires. We saw the impact of the air from the Canadian fires on our border. And air quality impacts all of us. The particle issue impacts children through adults, but also those who are living with asthma, as you mentioned, where I read that nearly 1 in 13 American children live with asthma, and it's exacerbated by smoke and particle pollution. So just briefly in closing, what would you say parents can start asking of their schools, maybe the school association, maybe the principal, maybe the school board? What's happening around air quality in our child's school?
Well, just stepping back a moment, first of all, in a city like mine, 1 in 3 children have been diagnosed with asthma. You gave a data of 1 in 13. So depending on where you, what you're surveying, the numbers vary greatly. So 1 in 3 is just so, so concerning.
Unbelievable. Wow. Yeah.
So one of the things that happened as a result of COVID in New Jersey, and I do believe this is available throughout the country, but you need to tap in to your state Department of Health. There's been a collaboration in New Jersey between the State Department of Health, the State Department of Education, and the New Jersey Development Authority, that where they are distributing HEPA filters, HEPA units per school at no cost. Now, in Camden, we were able to get them for every classroom and every school nurse's office. They're smaller, so they're not for like cafeterias and things like that. But in smaller spaces, every single classroom and every nurse's office got a HEPA system with 6 filter replacements. That will take us into several years of being able to use it. So this HEPA purifier was available through funding that is still out there. And I believe school nurses can lead this charge, because we have been talking about air quality in buildings way before COVID, because we have old buildings in many cases. We have not kept up with the maintenance of these older buildings at all. And so we have buildings where windows don't open, or we have buildings where windows could open, but they can't open because maybe the community outside is unsafe and we need to keep our buildings and doors locked, which makes these HEPA filter units that much more important. So I recommend strongly that school nurses reach out to their departments of health, their departments of education, and find out about this program, which is not only happening in my state.
No, that federal money has been distributed. And I have also read just what you said, to restate it, that many communities aren't even aware the funding's available or how to tap into it. So those who are listening, you can start asking those questions, as our Health Center, a senior school nurse correspondent, Robin Kogan, has given you some fuel to do that. And throughout this year and this school year, we hope to support those who care, really care about the health and well-being of our children in our communities, to learn more ways that they too can be advocating on behalf of children. Thank you for joining me today, Robin, and we'll have you back shortly.
Always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
This is Barbara Glickstein with HealthCetera.